can fly you out to Paris.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome to another Convos with Manny, man. This is a special treat because I got my boy Ladoon here from Dirty Jurors. Do they still call it Dirty Jurors out there? Because I don't know how political things are now. People are real sensitive. But in my Naughty by Nature days, we were still Dirty Jurors.
I don't think anyone calls it Dirty Jurors, but I don't think anyone would be offended by hearing Dirty Jurors. Everything's pretty much like, for me, like, you know, like you said, Naughty by Nature days is like over here. It's like, I'm from Newark, so it's like, you know, Brick City. You know
Brick City, yeah.
A lot of people say Jersey, just pure Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. My sister lives up there. But you guys will know Ladoon without knowing him because a lot of y'all be watching me on my Instagram wearing my sweaters and my t-shirts that say my God versus my enemies. And y'all be hitting me up and I be sending you their way. So their way is his way. He is the founder and creator of this brand, My God vs. My Enemies. And that's where I found him, through DJ Envy, who always was rocking it. And I always thought it was just so hard. I was like, yeah, man, My God versus everybody. Let's go. And I love that mentality of it. But I wanted to have you on so that we can talk about a range of things, from the idea concept of it to actually doing it. Because everybody that listens to me knows that I'm a doer, not a talker, and I'm annoyed by talkers. So mm-hmm. anyone that can set out for a dream and actually accomplish it and not quit, to me, I always want to hear their story and then where they've evolved to now. So where did it start conceptually, and then how'd you get it to where it's at now?
Conceptually, I think that growing up, just being, I grew up in a Christian household. I've always, you know, even coming in a space where I didn't have my personal relationship. I just had that forced relationship with Christianity at one point. And then eventually I had to step into my own space. And once I stepped into that space, I just was like, yo, how dope would it be? Especially being from Newark specifically, because we have a city that's completely, not divided, but it's like you're either Muslim or you're Christian out here.
Yeah.
It's like 50-50 out here. And I was just like, and I've seen a lot of Islamic brands that, you know, they do have some, you know, merch that says, like, there was one that said pray, which was dope. But then the other part of it was like, it was, I think it said the Halal Boys or something like that on the, and nothing was wrong with that. I'd wear it. But I was like, how dope would it be to have a Christian brand or something that really resonates how I feel and what I think? So I always thought it. But then, you know, life happens and I got to this place where I was just like, I feel like God, you know, God is, the thing is there. It puts it on your mind and says, you do this, but you're not executing. So God's like, okay, let me step away. Not even step away, but let me start to strip you a little bit to the point that you have to do this thing. So I started like, it was just falling apart in my life. And I was just like, and got to the point, like maybe if I had $200 to my name and I was like, well, if I print this many shirts and I sell them for XYZ, I can double this money. And I did it and I posted it and I didn't even have no bags or nothing. They were just like all lumped up together and if you rolled up and you needed a small, I'm like, I only got a medium, sold them. And I was like, yo, that went quick. So next thing I'm like, all right, cool. Let me try again. Let me double that back up. You know, I'm watching some of these business pages. Make sure you put all the profit right back into the brand. So yep. I'm like, cool. Does that. Flips it again. I'm like, yo. I was like, you know, I was working at Amazon at this time. I'm like, I'm looking at like what I'm making in a day, and I'm like, I'm definitely not going back to work. You know? That's it. So I'm like, yo, commit. Just commit. And I hear it in my head all the time. There's this video clip where Will Smith says, like, yo, just commit, man. Just commit to whatever. If you're going to break, it's going to break your heart. You're going to lose that job. You know what I'm saying? But all you have to do is fully commit to it. And I was like, yo, I'm committing to this. So I committed to it. Guided it going and started moving. And at this point, I was a party promoter too at the same time. So DJ Envy is somebody I booked all the time. So we had a very business relationship that was like 80% business, 20% friendship.
Right.
So then I gave him one shirt and he was wearing that shirt all the time. And I was like, he really liked that one shirt because he got money.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
point that, like, even me sometimes, once a shirt starts to, like, do this or something like that, I'm like, nah, this shirt gotta go.
Yeah.
One shirt so many times. And I was like, you know what? I should give him another shirt. Maybe he'll just be wearing them. So I gave him like two or three, and he was just wearing them consistently. And then at one point I was like, yo, what if I ask him to partner with me?
Mm.
And I give him a percentage of the company. And then I was like, nah, let me ask God about it. Let me pray on that, because I'm not going to give away something that God gave to me specifically to handle and do.
Right.
And be like, yo, where is, and like, you know, and just tell this person to come on board. So prayed about it, went to sleep, woke up next morning, text message in my phone from somebody that's in between me and Envy. I was like, yo, hey, can you come up to the station? Envy want to meet with you and talk about possibly, like, you know, working on a brand together. And I was like,
dang.
Prayed on this last night. Just prayed on this. And, you know, I realized, and after that, that was really it. We, you know, we partnered up on the brand, and, you know, we worked out a deal and situation, and we talked about how we can make it more, you know, bigger and better. And for him, I think it was simply just wearing it for him.
Yeah.
You know, some people always look at it like, what's the financial part that, you know, somebody like him might bring to the table? But you're looking at social network, you know what I'm saying? Social net worth, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, and it brought that to the table. And the crazy thing, it changed our friendship from, you know, 20% friendship, 80% business to more like 80% friendship, 20% business. Because me and Envy hardly talk about the brand. He's right. Partners in the brand, but we hardly talk about this. There's this level of trust that's there. We don't talk about it. He leaves the creativity to me, leaves all that, and we have meetings here and there. But that's really how the brand got going and started. And one thing that it just reminded me, it was almost like I had an aha moment just now, was like, when you're really steadfast in God and you're really, really tuned into God and you're really committed to your relationship with God, God will answer your prayers fast, and God will respond and talk to you fast. Mm. Sometimes it may not be what you want to hear, but he will cater to you quickly, whichever way that looks. So that's also a reminder to myself. Like, now I'm like, all right, I got to tighten up, because I may not be as intentional as I need to be in my relationship and communication with God.
Sure. I think it's also one of those things where he knows who's going to actually run with the God idea, or who's just going to sit on it and be afraid. Because I know COVID has created a bunch of just absolute transition for so many people, just in my circle alone. So I know it's happening everywhere, but the amount of people that have decided to enter into transition, or have been forced into transition because of whatever, vocation or whatever.
Right.
It really throws into perspective who he can trust with these monumental God-size dreams. Because you partnering with him is literally how I found it. Like, it's, I don't know if I would have found it any other way. But as he's wearing it with all his other stuff, and I know brands, I know clothes, and I also know the amount of people that hit me up to promote their Christian clothing line. And I look at the line and I'm like, nah, bruh. I'm so grateful that you're doing it. Praise God. But I am not wearing your shirt. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, I know. And sometimes I sit there, and we got to a place, you know, I'm being 100%. Like, there's just, you know, sometimes you get in space and it's like almost like a writer's block, creative block. Because it's almost like when artists, the sophomore jinx.
Yeah.
I'm being honest on here. I've probably never even said it anywhere. Like, I'm in that space where I'm like in a J. Cole moment where people are like, yo, when are you dropping that next, that next thing? And it's like, trying to be so intentional, because a lot of times in between, I've let testers come that I didn't really care for, but I wasn't being as intentional about the messaging. And leaning into creativity, because people think creativity is some people are naturally creative, but they need to get into the creative space in order for that magic to happen. Yep. You can be a creative, and if you're not in the right soil, you cannot blossom the way you need to blossom.
Have you figured out that soil? Do you know what sparks you? Is it place? Is it condition? Is it?
It's a lot of one. Like I said, the first part is that one-on-one with God.
Yeah. Necessary.
Secondly, a little bit of solitude is necessary too. So it's a constant, like, you know, T.D. Jakes says this all. He says it one time. Probably said it one time, and I've never heard the phrase. He said, sometimes in life, you can get so caught up with your busyness that it kills your business.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, so that's the space I was in, like, always trying to figure out. Like, I was never a clothing designer. I was never a e-commerce person. I was a person that was hand-to-hand. So either I was throwing a party. I mean, I'm a theater mate. I have a degree in theater. Acting is my passion.
Wow.
That's my number one thing that all my life I've always wanted, you know, that's still like a thing of mine, you know what I'm saying? But this thing that God put in my heart, like, I was never this person. I never sat around and said, oh, I'm gonna make clothes, or I like designs. I've never even looked at myself as the most fashionable person.
Right, right.
But entering into this space did allow me to really, really realize, like, you know, like, you can be, like, you know, people talk about manifest. I can manifest anything I want to be. You know what I'm saying? And it really requires those things. You know, your relationship with God, the soil you're in, and also not pouring from an empty cup.
Mm. Yeah.
I tend to do that. Like, I will, you know, almost like when Jesus lets the person touch his side and he's like, yo, who just touched me? I felt, you know, he felt energy pull. I'm like, everyone touch me. That's who I am. I am that person. Everyone touch me to depletion. Like, sometimes I get to the point I'm laying in bed. I'm like, I'm so tired. Oh my God. Like, I'm drained.
Yeah.
And I'm not even physically drained. It's spiritually drained.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
That's easy to happen when we were just talking about it last night on the episode that we recorded. We was talking about balance and understanding the key to balance and understanding who in your life is someone that you are just pouring into, and who in your life do you have a cyclical nature to where if you talk to them, you know that you're going to be able to pour out, but you're also going to be able to get some back.
Yeah.
Like, the conversation is going to be that type of thing. Those are few and far between, and those people you have to keep in your life. Because if not, you will live an imbalanced life, and it will drain on you, and you'll have to stop. You'll be forced to stop because you'll come to an end.
Darius Daniels says this all the time, and he said, you gotta know the difference. You gotta be able to determine who in your life is relational intelligence is important. And knowing who in your life is pouring into you, and who's a friend, who is an associate, who is an assignment, who is a project, who is a mentee in your life. You got, like, those categories have to be determined.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And one of the biggest problems that I personally have is I'm quick to put an assignment into a friend role.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the problem with that, but you only realize after a certain period of time that certain people are assignments, right? So an assignment is no problem with having people in your life that are assignments, as long as you know that.
Yep.
Because when somebody's an assignment, you can never expect reciprocation from them.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, don't get me wrong. You may give them a love and they may give you love back, but you can't expect it.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? Because you will disappoint yourself. You will be like, yo, today my graduation, I'm expecting this person to show up because I've done so much for them. I've been this person to them. And that's time they won't show up, and they won't feel away because it's not their job to feel that way. They're, they're still concerned about that part of their life that they're working on. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, the most important thing is what you're talking about is the transference of energy. So when you expect something from someone, there is an energy that leaves you emotionally, to which now you have placed a value on someone that they never were intended to have that value. They were never intended to reciprocate any type of.
Right.
So you got to be really stingy with your energy, stingy where you put your emotions, where you put your expectations, right. Because that does set you up for like a horrible downfall. Now, it's something that you said, that solitude, and this is something that I learned back in the day. There's a big difference between solitude and being lonely. Right. And if you don't understand the difference between the two, your emotional status can be real messed up. Like I have a friend that's, you know, she's been out there trying to date, single mom, trying to make it happen. And I think yesterday she came to the realization that being alone right now is the best for her. I don't think she understands that what she's choosing is solitude. Solitude is something where you make a decision to go into a place in life where you are by yourself for a purpose, and you are going to be looking for that purpose. You're going to be seeking, and you're going to be creating an environment in your life that sets you up to succeed while you are alone. Being alone is a state of despair. We see it as like, oh my God, nobody's here. I can't, why is nobody love me? It's all these feelings of desperation. But right. If you can accurately see in your life, like, oh, this is a solitude period that God has me in. There is a purpose for this aloneness. And right. It's not disparity. It's creativity. It's the next new idea. It's the off-ramp to the old season and the on-ramp to the new season.
And that's
something that I've never been afraid of. I've never been afraid of being on my own, solo, dolo. It's so necessary because it's the only time that you can clearly hear what God's telling you. And it's not influenced by other people and their opinions or their ideas or what they would like for your life to happen.
Right.
So solitude is something that if you're listening and you're in that place where it's just you, determine quickly whether or not this is solitude or loneliness, because it will change the way you attack your day.
Right.
So in your solitude, in you realizing transition and in your life, like, from dreaming, from creating this brand, from creating all these things, we know that, you know, vocation plays a lot into where your time goes during your day. But then when you're not in that, then you're just left with your thoughts and who you are. And I've been on your podcast and we've been able to talk about this. But what has been the most important factor that you've been learning when it comes to you on a personal level?
I think for me, a theme that is probably, is it a battle? No, I think it's something that I just hear and know is probably like obedience.
Mm-hmm.
Having that conversation with self about what obedience looks like. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, knowing what's next in your life and your speed in transition to the next level is tied to your immediate obedience. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Like, how quickly can you be obedient is also how quickly doors can open. If you hesitate sometimes and you are obedient, it's still disobedience. So there are repercussions for it. Does it mean with something that's probably supposed to happen in 24 hours, can end up taking a week instead. It can take 2 weeks. It can take a year. It can take 5 years. It's your ability, but it just depends sometimes how big the task is sometimes. And maybe the simplest thing, God may be like, yo, I need you to pull over and pray right now. And you're like, I'm praying when I get home.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you done caught a flat and you're like, you're not even thinking about the prayer that you didn't do. You're just like, well, let me just do it flat. Now I'm frustrated. Now your day is going longer. Now you're tired. Now you done missed the opportunity. You were supposed to network somewhere because you were not there on time. That network didn't happen. That was supposed to open a door for you. So it's all like your ability, like, to be obedient. That's something that I'm, you know, understanding, you know, getting to this age, man, like, this year is the big 40, man. So,
wow. Welcome.
Turning 40 is the next level. And it's like being able to also understand, like, yo, you know, like, yes, I know what you thought 40 was going to look like versus what it actually looks like, and being content and understanding that, like, for me, one thing that I always resonates in my head that, you know, when you're obedient and you're in the space of allowing God to work, that the years that you feel like you lost, God will restore them 7 times in the next couple of years. These next 10 years will feel like 20 years of bliss. If you know what I'm saying? Like, you 20 years from now, when it's probably turning 60, I'm going to feel like, yo, I still feel 40. I feel like I had an amazing 20-year run and I can still keep going.
Yeah.
But it's tied to your obedience. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Man, what did you think 40 would be like? Like, what do you think, like, when you were 20, what did you feel like you would have by 40?
And so I'm always,
the what?
No, I said I'm always going to flip that and think, like, about my parents in a big time frame.
Yeah.
So at 38, I remember my mother was 39 years old, and she was giving birth to her fourth child.
Dang.
Her fourth child. My father was what? If my mother was 39, my father was like 42. That's 56. Yeah, 43, something like that. There's a 4-year difference. I'm looking like, yo, at this age, my parents they had kids. They had moved from Atlanta to Nigeria to Newark. And I'm sitting here at 40 looking like, I should get a French bulldog. I'm like, I should get a French bulldog. That would be nice. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man. Did you think you'd be married already? You think you'd be like...
I did think I would be married by 40. I definitely, 40 at 40, I didn't think I'd still be in a space of trying to make the decision. You know what I'm saying? I was still trying to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm currently in a relationship, and it's just one of those things where it's like, I've had so many friends that had kids at 20. I have friends that had kids when we were in high school. So now I'm looking now, the kids are running into me and on social media like, oh, you went to school with my mom. I'm like, I thought we were like the same age. And it's like, yo, it's just different. Like, I definitely thought I'd have children. I thought I'd have children for sure. But yeah, like I said, my girlfriend is more like, you know, we've seen what trauma looks like in other families, like people coming from those backgrounds. And, you know, I'm not a product of my environment because, you know, like, I did grow up with both my parents. But just in here, in this area of Newark, just in general, a lot of people are not born with, they don't have their parents in.
Yeah.
They don't have both their parents at home. Some people barely have one parent at home. They were raised by their grandparents. So some people are raised in survival mode, and I'm raised on love. But you know what I'm saying? Like, so the ideas are different, but understanding and seeing people and knowing that there's a lot of healing that has to happen because we're all just so different, like so completely different.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about the chemical aspect of being different. We're just talking about being raised completely different, having different cultural backgrounds. Then you add into the mix that you bring these two people together who have these different backgrounds, different makeups, different ideas of what love looks like. And now it's like, hey, I like you. You like each other. You like me. I like you. Let's be together. And then it's like, damn it, wow, this is hard. This is not as, I thought this was going to be as simple this, but now it's like, because we don't, you know, we're still trying to get to know each other and we don't know ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't know themselves. So it's like, that's the journey that I'm on. But the great thing is, like, you know, and I could be gassing, you know what I'm saying? I could be gassing right now because the agent manager I work with always has me cast for these 25 to 30 roles, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I feel like I'm blessed in that sense, you know what I'm saying? I do feel like the obedience is, I think obedience is tied to the youth that God gives me, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I look at my friends who I went to high school with, and I'm like, you were in high school?
Yeah.
I'm like, Look, man, were you from? Did you go to school 10 years before me?
I do the same thing. I'm like, yo, time has been good to me, man, because most of my friends, time is not their friend at all. Like, it's been, it wears on them. You know, I think this expectation of where we should be in life hinders more than it helps.
Yeah.
I almost feel like setting goals is futile. I really do. Like, and I don't mean like you shouldn't have goals. I just think you shouldn't be married to goals. I think goals should be like your girlfriend in high school, to where you're like, this is going to be fun for a second. And if it works, awesome. If we become high school sweethearts, great. But more often than not, it's not going to last. It's going to be something new that comes. And I feel like anytime I've set a goal in my life or where I would like to be at this time, it has been rare. And I'm a hard worker. Like, I go after things. But it has been rare where my goals line up with my timing. I had the goal of having this house that I just flipped. Finished it in 6 weeks. I hit my goal because that was in my control, which was work, 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 get it done when it's supposed to get done. Did that. Nailed it.
Right.
I was expecting to sell it in the first 2 weeks.
Right.
Bruh, it's been a month. Have not sold it. It's completely out of my control. Not only is the house beautiful, it's priced right, it's so nice, but I have not sold it yet. And then we're going over a month now. And so I'm like, dang, Jesus. Like, I can't even, like, in the stuff that should just be 1 + 1 = 2. Like, this is just simple. This is a house. You're going to make something. It's going to be nice quality. Somebody's going to want to buy it because it's priced right. And there you go.
I'm about to buy it.
When that junk don't work, it's like, oh, my God, I can't even trust. Like, I can't even really trust in my thoughts of like, this is when this is going to happen, or this is what's going to happen, or this.
It's definitely a gut punch, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I've sat here and like, I haven't done a major new release or change in the brand, but I've done these small testers that are not as intentional as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
But, don't get me worried. The hard work is there in trying to maintain a brand, but sometimes you don't even have that like intentionality about what you want to do, but and you do something and you think just because one person said, yo, that's hot, and you drop this and you make a release and you drop this shirt, and it's like people are like, that's cool. I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what? What's going on, God? This is your idea. And then sometimes I have to sit back like, no, that was your timing, your idea, what you thought was going to happen, and sometimes you got to wait. And I've seen that happen. It's so crazy. And I'm just kind of referencing it. I've had a design that didn't do nothing, and then one day some random person wears it that has this crazy following, and a shirt that I probably would have sold for $50, I brought it down to $20. Then some random person wears it online, and then out of nowhere, it's like, yo, why are these shirts flying? I'm like, oh, I was supposed to change the price back. But it was just, yeah, it's just the craziest thing sometimes. But that's just how God works. It's not your timing. It's not your plan. It's God's plan over your plan consistently. No matter what you do. You can work. I've started this whole work system every night, laying down the three things that are the main three things I need to do the next day in order for me to win the day, wake up at 4 a.m., meal prep, plan on napping, not napping. Create a whole system, because I talk to so many people that are like in mentorship spaces, and they're just like, yo, just create a system.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep working that system consistently. Keep chopping when no one's looking, and it's going to work. And then, you know, sometimes it works, and sometimes God's plan comes in place, and it's you like, you're chopping for a long time and nothing seems to hit. And then, you know, that's when God, you know, can show up. And sometimes God will starve certain things that no longer serve you.
Yeah. I think it's important to just, as a human who's very finite, I think what I'm learning is spend more energy on how I handle transitions
mm-hmm.
than trying to predict transitions. Right. Cause every time I'm like, God, this is the season I'm going to get promoted. I got that person out of my life. I got that. It was them holding me back. It was this mental. It was all these things holding me back. Now is the time for my blessing. And that junk don't line up. So I'm like, man, okay, I think what I need to do is master the art of waiting and transition. Like my attitude and my response to these moments in life, because these moments are going to, they're going to determine whether or not I enjoy the season that I'm in. Because the season that I'm in is not my choice. It's just not. But how I react to that season, how I treat people in that season, how I treat myself in that season is fully up to me. And so now I'm more focused on how I handle my season than what season I'm in. Because what season I'm in, I'm done trying to tell God, this is what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm going to be in this season. I'm just like, man, I'm where I'm at. This is cool. Like I told myself with this house, I was like, you know what, God, if it don't sell, I'm going to move in. I'm going to enjoy my work. I'm going to enjoy my work, and I'm not going to think, oh, my God, I got all this money in this house. I paid cash for it. What am I going to do? I'm going to be like, thank you, Jesus, that I get to enjoy this creation, and it's going to sell when you want it to sell. I'm going to be all right. Nothing's going to deter me from having joy. I'm going to figure it out. It's going to be all good. And that's literally been my mentality. Instead of like stressing, I ain't hitting up my agent like, yo, what's up? Yo, we need to do this. Yo, what's up? I'm just like, it's whatever.
Yeah. I think that, and that's a good question. I think I have a question for you. So in these moments, because there's like this, you know, unsaid rule, like you look at all the gurus on social media, you listen to Eric Thomas, you know, if you want to succeed more than you breathe, the convo, you hear that over and over and over. So if you're in a transitionary phase and you're like confused, maybe you feel like, man, I'm just like sad about this not working. Now, do you try and make fun out of this season? Do you try to, you know, even though you want to like be in a place of release and allowing things to work themselves out, but do you try and make like fun? Do you try and create some level of fun in this time? Like, yeah, this ain't working right now, but I'm going to enjoy this not working season.
That's kind of what I feel like I've done. Like I told my wife, I was like, you know what, babe, I'm going to give it one more month. If this thing doesn't sell, or if what I thought was going to happen doesn't happen, then we're just going to move in and enjoy this amazing house that we redid. And we'll put it up on the market when our house is done. And
house too.
Yeah, when our house is gonna be better than the house that I just did. So I'm like, you know what, we'll just live in it till our house is done and stop stressing about, because right now we're living in a friend's apartment guest room. Like our whole life is in pods. I'm spending $1,000 a month on pods, on storage, because our whole life is in there. And I'm living in a friend's apartment. I don't have parking spaces. I don't have anything that's comfortable. And in Nashville, we're good. We have our own house, we have our own whatever. But we're good.
Right.
But when we're in LA, it's just like nomadic. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like
the house you built is in LA?
Yeah, yeah. So I have two houses I have two houses in LA. One I'm flipping, one I'm also remodeling, but one I'm living in, the other one I'm trying to sell. And so in that sense, I'm just like, we're gonna make this a blessing in disguise. We're just going to choose to look at it this way. Because if not, then the other option is what? Feel downtrodden, feel like, you know, start doubting yourself. I did everything. When I go into a situation, I always get like 2 to 3 people to check yes before I go into anything. So I got multiple people to check yes. 3 different realtors, my business manager, me, my own realtor, my contractor. Everybody was like, this is good. This is a good look. Let's make it happen. So I did everything important on the front end. And why it's happening like this on the back end, I'm not going to waste time questioning. I'm just going to be like, no, I did all the due diligence on the front end. Whatever's happening on the back end, I cannot control. There will be a buyer. God will have it. I'm not going to stress. And so I like changing the situation to benefit me and to think in my mind, well, I can't wait to see what God does when he does show up. Like when it is time to sell this thing. Because what's your alternative, man? Really, what's your alternative when it comes to shitty situations? Like, you can doubt God, which I promised myself I can't do anymore. Because when I used to doubt him, I always felt stupid when he would come through. When he wanted to come through, and I'd be like, damn, remember this whole 6 months I just spent doubting you and, like, secretly hating on you, secretly, like, cursing you, like, man, you're whack, man. This is so dumb. And then you come through, and then I got to look back on my life and be like, there's never been a time where I have gone without, ever.
Yeah.
So I refuse to now allow doubt or dissension to happen between me and God. I refuse, because I hated being the guy that had to come back to God to be like, forgive me. Forgive me for doubting you. Forgive me for, even though you freaking came through all the time, I don't remember the last time I missed a bill. I cannot remember. Last time I stressed over missing a bill or not having money to pay for a bill. Literally can't. It's so far from me.
Right.
And now I'm going to be like, I'm going to start doubting you? I can't. There's no room for that.
This ain't the time for that.
No. It's going to be like, no. I've learned my lesson. I don't need you to keep putting me in really hard situations to test my surety in you. No, I'm going to be fine. No matter what, how this plays out, I'm going to be fine. And so now situations like this, I think maybe 10 years ago, I would be like doubting God, cursing God, like, you know, upset, angry. Now I'm just like, all right, well, how am I going to remix this? How am I going to remix this? Because I made wise decisions, but my plan didn't work out. Or it's not that it didn't work out. It has not worked out yet. There's just a different plan that God may have for this. And that's what it is. You know what I'm saying?
And that always looks like perspective. Always looks like perspective. Because I remember somebody said it to me, but I was like, man, it's been I'm a hard ass day. That's me. It's been a hard ass day. Somebody's like, no. Somebody's like, just change the verbiage on that. And this has been a character building day. Like, you know, it doesn't feel like it, but I'm going to say it. It's been a hard, I was like, this has been a hard ass character building day.
I hear what you're saying.
I feel you, but I don't feel it. But you know, once you get out that moment and you really separate yourself, you got to really be like, that was a character building day. That was a character building day. I had to practice patience. I had to practice understanding. I had to practice giving grace. Like, you know, once you step into this place, and, you know, one of the biggest things in my fear is God, like, taking the mantle off of me and saying, you know what, I gave you this thing and you dropped the ball, so let me pass it to somebody else. So when you are in those spaces, just being like, man, I signed up for this. I wanted to do this. There are certain things you say to God and things you manifested your whole life that when it starts to happen, you can't question why this is happening. Like I said, since I was a kid, I've always said, plain as day, I want to change the world. Change the world. That was the one thing I used to say. My father used to be like, yeah, you're going to be a doctor, a lawyer. I was like, I don't know if that falls in line with changing the world. But I have to say that if you're a doctor, a lawyer, that you can't change the world. But me, I always said I'm going to change the world. So now getting to the space where opportunities are coming my way. Sometimes I question, like, I'd be like, why did this person, you know, when you have those moments when the imposter syndrome kicks in, it's like, why are all these business people hitting me up and saying, let's collab, let's do this, would love to work with you on this product? Like, why me? You know what I'm saying? And it's like, understanding, like, yo, okay, now this is where discernment kicks in. You also have to learn if you're going to be this person that God calls you to be, you got to learn what to say yes to, what to say no to, how to be, how to really show up. And you know, somebody said, you know, I hate to say it, I do feel this way. A lot of people say that you can't do everything. And I feel like there are only a few people in this world that God gives the strength to do everything. You might be tired doing it. You might complain a little bit doing it, but there's a few people I know. And I see them and they're able to do everything because they've been called to do that.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Do you know, do you have a number or do you have a recognizable season to which you know this is going to be your off-ramp out of the rat race? Because I noticed this about successful people. They get addicted to the chase of succeeding. Mm-hmm. And they have $100 million, but they're going. They're still, they're like as if they had $20 in the bank. They're working as hard. And a lot of them say, you know, it's because, you know, this is what I do or this is what I da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I wonder if people are like me to where I have a number and I have a recognizable off ramp. Like I'm like, God, if I can just have this a month, I will downgrade my life to where I live under this a month and I will get off of this damn rat race that is this world and this need to succeed, this need to have all the things. You know, because we're constantly bombarded with that. We're constantly bombarded with, you know, I love the hip hop culture. I love the business culture. I love the successful culture. I do. And I see what comes with that. And I admittedly admit to myself, like, I will do what it takes, but there's a time limit. Jesus, yeah. I would really love to not have to keep doing this. Yeah. I don't want to stay on this phone. I hate that I have to right now. I don't like promoting myself. I don't like counting likes. I don't like talking to my tech guy. Man, why didn't this work? Why didn't this work? What's going on with Facebook? Why ain't nobody I only have 30 views on this last video. What's going on? I hate that. I want to be in a place where every need is taken care of and I have zero responsibility or pressure to perform. Right. Or to hit numbers, quote unquote, when it comes to making yourself this success. I think that's why I'm right. so attracted to real estate. Right. Because it's something that happens in the background. Buy up a bunch of houses, let them cash flow, and sure, there'll be problems. I get it. But yeah. I hire people to handle those problems, and I'm far removed from it. I've adjusted to my life where my risk reward is very much minimal, and I'm in a good place. Where I can bless people and not feel scared of giving away money. I can do everything that I really want because I understand what I really want is simple. Simple yeah. things. Do you have a picture of like, once I get here, I'm on the off ramp? And it doesn't mean that you're going to stop doing things, but it just means that you no longer are playing by any rule.
So there's an A, B, and C, right? So A is, I have this disgruntled view at money, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because I don't love money. I don't love money. And that's the problem because I know for a fact, if I loved money, I would be rich, mm-hmm. wealthy. Mm-hmm. I'm still an average person. I tell people I'm still an average person. Every once in a while, I'm looking at my account like, gotta hustle a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's just real. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And that's real. Like, I mean, you know, luckily I'm in this place where everything's on auto pay, but there are seasons where I'm like, well, you gotta up the ante a little bit because you might have to take some things off auto pay. So that's the A part is that I'm so not tied to money because I just like, I really understand how much happiness is. Being present and really just enjoying life is important because I learned that in high school. Somebody said to me, I still don't remember to this day who said it to me. He said to me, make sure that you enjoy high school because these are going to be the best times of your life. Mm. Somebody said that to me my freshman year. I was like, I'm enjoying every moment of high school and still got the grades done. You know what I'm saying?
Yep,
and
yep.
I every trip had fun. I wasn't Zach Morris, but I wasn't Screech. You know what I'm saying? I was somewhere in between. I was probably like the male Lisa Turtle. Well, Lisa was popular. So yeah. Like I was really popular. If I was, I don't know, but I was somewhere in between. I might have been, I wasn't a jock, so I wasn't AC Slater either. You know what I'm saying? For all the Generation Z, I know that this sounds like nothing right now. So that's the A part of it. Is that I enjoy every moment, and when it comes down to it, if I need to get money, I can get money.
Right.
with the A part. So do I have a time frame? That A part has no time frame. The B part of me is, if I hit 10 mil, if I touched 10 mil, because I know a million's nothing. Mm-hmm. A million, you can buy a house, you're out. You can buy a house, you pay, put a couple bills on auto pay, you taxes hit.
Yeah.
You
broke.
No, 10 yeah, mil, I know I can have a business or two running. And
you can
I'm
make
straight.
That work. Yep, yep.
My family are good. I'll be good. But I also love my people and family and friends so much that the real number would be 100 mil at 45 years old, and I would be able to make sure everybody around me is good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't need 200 million. I don't need 500 million. I don't need $1 billion.
I don't think anybody does, yeah.
Yeah, so, 100 mil, I can make sure my whole entire family, immediate circle of family is good. I'm sure my wife, children, everyone is good.
That brings me to that. I'm sorry for interjecting, because I was just reading this online, and I want to know where you stand on this, because I was reading this post on Instagram where it was a bunch of celebrities who are all saying, we're not leaving our money to our kids at all. Like, that's just not going to happen, because we're going to take away their ability to work, to learn how to get up every day and strive for something. If we leave them a trust, they're going to be, there's like a half part of their humanity will be taken away, like their ability to be able to create. And Jackie right. Chan said something which like blew my mind. Of course, Chinese proverb, Jackie Chan. He said, if my kids are capable, they will create their own wealth. If they're mm-hmm. not, they'll squander mine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, damn. And it was a twist and a rub, because I know, in the Bible, it talks about how blessed a man is to leave money for generations to come. So I always thought, yeah, I want to have enough money to leave for generations to come. Right. But then when I'm really thinking about it, I'm like, oh, I don't know if that's the best thing for the generation to come. Because right. if my parents were hella rich, I would not have this go-getter, I can do anything mentality, nothing scares me, I'm like whatever. You can't help but have entitlement. And that's something that most of the rich people said. They're like, right now, they're living a life that is not real. Our kids are living a life that is not real. They fly in private jets. They have access to the best everything. When we vacation, they vacation. We're not going to like stay at the Holiday Inn. So they're right. experiencing things, and this is their new normal, and we're afraid that they don't understand what normal means. So right. they're refusing to leave trust. So I'm curious, if you did hit the 100 million, what would you leave and how would you leave it? What would be the condition?
I do think that – I think it's what you instill in them, like in growing up, when it comes to children and talking to them and letting them know to see both sides. Like, I'm never going to be so far removed, because I just have so many family members that, like, that, all we got to do is go to Nigeria and see what poverty is like, my family, that's simple. And then I feel like not connected to the hood, like I got to be in the hood and people got to see me, but more being like in touch. Like, I'm like always going to be trying to help those in need. You know what I'm saying? So I think my children have to experience that. But the trust part, I think they would be on a situation, they would not know about the trust. To be honest, I don't think I hope they never see this interview. they wouldn't know about the trust, but I would have something in place, something like what Allen Iverson has in place right now that kind of, I don't remember the exact terms of his deal, but luckily he had an agent that set something up for him after everything was blown away, where he was able, I could be wrong, somebody probably ended up quoting me, but I think it was something like he gets $1 million a year, from now till probably like 80, because somebody set something up with his Reebok deal that allows him to see XYZ amount of money. And something like that, just in case they don't, nobody wants their kid to suffer, But I'm just saying I've set something in place. I'm not saying it'd be $1 million a year, but it may be something that makes sure that they're always, it's almost like 401k, they'll have something coming. But like they'll have something coming, but in the same token, I'll also make sure that, you know, I haven't thought that far ahead. That's probably the best part I can think of, is saying that they, as long as, if they prove that they can create their own fortune, they will have access to the main fortune. It's kind of like that. If you can create your own, you can do your own thing. And if not, I am here to continuously encourage you on this journey. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not going to punish you, because God doesn't punish me. You know what I'm saying? When I'm not worthy for a bunch of things. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I may step back and let you fall on your face a little bit for just so that you experience and understand the process of falling on your face, because eventually I won't be here. If you've never fallen on your face and you fall on your face when I'm not here, you may not know how to handle it. So you need to be able to fall on your face every once in a while, because I feel like my parents let me fall so many times and finally came to the rescue. And they may not have come to the rescue and bought me a brand new car or anything, but they've let me catch the bus at 11 p.m. at night to go to a job and have to catch the bus back, knowing they could have bought me a car. But they're like, yo, let you save up XYZ amount of money. And then I'm like, I'm going to go buy a car. And then I go to the dealership and they're like, well, here goes XYZ amount of money to help you out. You know what I'm saying? You didn't expect that. You know what I'm saying? But then let me know that you have my back.
See, there's a couple of things that these people said that they would do, which was very, like, to me, like, great ideas. So one of them said, once college is done, you're done. Mm-hmm. I'll take care of college, and I'm going to set up a trust that's a skip generation trust. So mm-hmm. what it does is I have so much money that I'm always going to take care of schooling for your next generation. So I've taken care of my kids' schooling, and now their kids, I'm going to pay for their school. But once I pay for their school, they're done. And then their kids, I have enough money, so I'm going to take care of their school, and so on and so forth. I'm going to take care of whatever it is that you're trying to learn or go for. That was one.
Yeah.
Ashton Kutcher said that I will invest in any of my kids' businesses, assuming that they've done the work to create a good business plan, and it's a good idea. If I believe in the idea, not the kid, because it's my kid and I want to do everything for him. But if they do the work to show me the business, I will be an investor. But I will not leave them money. And I think if they know that there is something as a safeguard, then I think the motivation will not be there. It just won't, because there is no falling on your face. There's falling, but you know I'm always going to be caught. And so that removes the idea of fear of responsibility, which is what makes people really, really like hone in on, okay, this is all I got. Like, so for me and my wife, we have zero safety nets. There is no rich benefactor. There is no mom and dad are going to save. I mean, if we ended up homeless, could I live in my parents' house? Sure. But that house is my house. It's not my parents' house. I bought them that house. There is no money coming to me when they die. Maybe 30 grand. Some of that I'll use to pay the you know, funeral. But that's it.
Yeah.
And there's something about knowing that it's like, oh, I can't just be frivolous. I can't be like whatever. You know what I'm saying? I have to be smart, and I have to really consider the value of what I'm buying, what I'm spending. And I will never... There's brief moments where I wish my parents were rich and they left me money. But usually those are in weak character moments where it's like, I just want to be lazy right now. I don't want this to have to work. I want to be able for it not to work and I still be okay. That's the only times I wish my parents, or when I'm in a real fleshly state and I'm like, shit, I really wish I could get that new Bentley. I really do. I really want the new Bentley. And I want the new Porsche. I want this. I wish I can. It's always in those moments where it's not really where it's serving my global community,
but
my ego, which is like what George Lucas said, who's worth like billions. He's like, I'm going to leave my money to further advance education. My kids aren't getting any of it. And I think about that and I'm like, wow. As one man with $6 billion, you know what you can do with the Jersey school system, or for the LA County school system? You can go into everybody and be like, all the underserved communities, laptops for every kid, all the schools get all redone, remodeled, everything. So now all the underprivileged kids have the same shot as the people that are going to Oak Ridge paying $40,000 a year. Right. When these kids couldn't afford, like, he can do that with his wealth. Now you think about what kind of minds will be created from that investment, as opposed to his kids getting $6 billion.
Yeah, and they're gonna sleep it away,
and they gonna freaking.
I can't imagine if I was like, if I knew I had that, right? I would just go to sleep. I would go to sleep. I'd turn on the TV. I can think of a million shows that everyone's talking about right now that I feel like I should watch. You know what I'm saying?
Unless you set it up to where us right now. Imagine if our parents were secret billionaires and they waited till 40. Because now if you come into a billion, you're like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Right.
I've lived this whole life nickel and diming it. Now I'm going to come into a billion. You've already established a character of like, I'm not a snob. I'm not a whatever. I've went through my phases. I'm kind of going towards the latter part of life.
Right.
And now I'm like, oh, I know what I would do with the billion. Like, if somebody gave me a billion right now, I know exactly what I would do. I know exactly what I would do. I'd put away this much, this much. What happened?
I'm taking a month off.
Yeah. Yeah. You would. I know what I like. I wouldn't go buy a 40,000 square foot house.
Yeah.
I'd buy a 4,000 square foot house. I would just make it exactly what I like. I would put a certain amount away that gives me a certain amount of month. I will put my life according to that certain amount of month. And then I will look for opportunities to invest in people, in places, and charity. Because I do not need $1 billion. I will be fine with 50 million or 100 million. And I will siphon it off. And I will continue to invest in people and teach my family and friends how to create their own wealth. Here's your first house. I'm going to pay for some of it. And then it's going to be in your name. Now you manage it. And now figure out a way to turn that one house into 10 houses.
Right.
Here's your leg up. I never got a leg up. All I needed was a leg up. All I needed somebody was give me a leg up. And I learned the rest myself.
Right.
That's what I would do.
I think I've kind of created my own leg ups and network and people I've been around, and just, I think character has created that. You know, if some type of inheritance came my way, it would be a great thing. It could move things, the ball, a little faster.
Yeah.
But knowing I don't have that creates that grind. I definitely would not have the grind to wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning.
No.
I can solve everything that I think. The only, like, you know, thank God I don't have any mental health issues or any specific dire, you know what I'm saying? There's things like anxiety you have. But, I mean, to be honest, I'd probably be, you know, if I knew I had that, there'd be no rush for anything. Like, you know, so that's one of the biggest things that.
I know my life wouldn't change much. The only thing that would change was that I would have the house that I want here. Which all I want is just a house with a little bit of land. I don't want something bigger than I can clean myself. I just don't. Right. I don't want to put myself in that kind of, I don't think it's necessary. I don't want a house that's so big that there's rooms I just never go into. I just think it's dumb. I don't want that for my life. I love cars, but I also understand that I can't drive more than, you know, my number of cars at a time is like 6. Because when I had 7, I felt like a damn valet. I was just valeting myself, trying to drive every car. I had to move them all. I mean, granted, when you're rich, you could probably just put them in a garage and you ain't got to move them all. But the amount of time it takes to drive these things to just keep them in working order is insane.
You got to start the car all the time.
You got to start it. And now, granted, I've had some rich people where they literally pay someone to come to their house and start their cars for them. But again, I think that at that point, it's like, your enjoyment was starting the car, hearing the engine roar, like putting it out on the road. Like,
right.
So at a whole time, 7 is the most I'll get. And if I want a new one, I got to sell an old one and just keep it moving. Right. So my life wouldn't change at all. I just would now start looking to the next generation to invest in them, invest in great artists, start a label, somebody who whatever, like I did for my nephew, buy him a startup set. So I got him a little laptop, a microphone or whatever. And I'm like, show me what you got. Could I pay for a lot more stuff? Could I get him a nice mic? I could, but I didn't. I started him out with a 58 because my rule of thumb is if you don't do with what you have, you're not going to do with you getting more. If you ain't doing it with the cheap mic, you can't be like, oh, if I had the expensive mic, then I'd be putting out songs all the time. Oh, if I had this, oh, I'd be doing this. I'm like, no, you're bullshitting yourself. If you don't do it now, it's not in you to do it. only reward yourself when you work hard with what you have. Then reward yourself. Like, I've been mixing for 5 years. Let me get some better speakers.
Right.
I've been going ham. Let me get a better mic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
treat yourself for the work. Yeah.
Yeah. And before we wrap up, what was the third thing? It was three parts on what is the signs that you are ready for get to the off ramp.
Oh, the third one was 100 mil. Oh,
okay. Okay.
The first one was 10 mil. I know I can be good. I can.
Right.
I can function. I can live decently, because I still think 10 million is not a lot, but I'm not a person that requires much. Mm-hmm. And I can find me a nice home in Nashville and just chill out and I'd read books and try and make some money online as well. I still would probably run an e-commerce business as well. But the 100 mil makes sure that everybody around me is good. And I'm not saying they're good, but we have some type of business that we're all in together.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? And make sure that everyone's good.
The good thing about it is that you can afford mistakes.
Yeah.
When you have that much money, like, you can afford and I don't mean like stupid mistakes. I mean, like, we're genuinely giving our all to something and we're trying to make it work, and we may make a mistake here or there, but eventually it gets to working. We just don't lose our house when we make this one mistake.
With the million, you still can't make any.
No.
You can't make any mistakes.
My house in LA is $1 million, and it's a 1900 square foot house that I needed to remodel. And it's not in like the best area. I think about that. I'm like, oh my God. Like, money doesn't go.
This is the one you're trying to sell, or this is the one?
This is the one I'm living in.
Okay.
But I'm turning it from 1900 square feet to 4300 square feet.
What's the other one that you're trying to sell?
The other spot is like 3300 square feet. Super nice. Like what I did. It's on my Instagram. It's
really, I gotta check that out.
Oh, it's super nice. Go to my Instagram. I'll send you the listing when we get off here. But
yeah, LA's calling me, man.
Yeah, but it's like 1-6. I think we have it at 1679.
God is faithful.
Yeah, yeah. God, won't he do it? He will.
God is faithful somehow, some way.
Bro,
man.
I had a friend that did that once. My old road pastor, he was in Atlanta, and he went to go see this model house. And it was like, back then, it was probably like $400,000 house. It was like 6,000 square feet. It was big. This was probably like 15 years ago. That's a lot back then. And he went up there and he walked it. It hasn't even been finished being built. And he gets to the top floor. It was like four stories. He gets to the top floor and he's like, this is the prayer room. He heard God speak. This is the prayer room. And he's like, this is my house. And this was the model house that they showed off to get people to buy into the neighborhood. And he's like, I can't afford this. Right. But he knew God was like, this is your house. This will be where you set up your prayer room.
Wow.
Tell me why. He goes through with the process of trying to buy the house. Mm-hmm. Someone gives him the down payment, and someone calls him once he's in the house and says, God told me to pay for your next 2 years. What are all your bills?
What?
Tells him his bills, and the guy sends a check for 2 years worth of bills, because in his heart, he wanted this house to be a place where artists could come and relax, like get away. Anyone who's going through something, or if you know, a fallen preacher or artist, they come, they relax. It was just a den for refuge. And God saw his heart was pure on it. And so the whole time he was there, somebody else paid for it. I was like, man, God is real, bro.
That's for real right there.
God is real. Bro, thanks so much for taking time, man. I know people are going to be blessed by this, bro. I'm so happy for where you're at. I know we're going to continue talking, but hey, guys, if you want to check out LaDune, I'm going to have his all his links in the description. So for his clothing line, for his Instagram, so y'all can check him out, follow him, get some gear, get some My God Versus My Enemies, because I know y'all be loving it when I wear it all the time. So check out his podcast, The Unconventional Christian, right?
Check me out on Raising Canaan.
Oh, snap. You on Raising Canaan? Bro, I've been watching that. What freaking episode?
You gotta review some episodes and be like, there's moments when I'm sitting there with Unique and he's like, he's yelling at his crew and I'm in there, I'm part of the crew. But episode and a couple, probably about 2 weeks, there's a breakout moment. So,
bruh, I'm so excited. I'm all caught up. I love that show.
I'm halfway like, yo, my friends are like, yo, we should do a watch party. I'm like, I mean, it's a strong 10 minutes that I'm in motion.
That's dope.
Like, nah, we need to. I might do it. Who knows?
Do it, especially if the final edit's done. Don't do it before the final edit. Like, be like, I need to see the final edit. Make sure that I'm in it. Because my wife threw a watch party.
Like, it's a very, the role that what I'm doing carries the scene.
Okay, good. Yeah, then do a watch party.
There's no way they can
cut it out. Yeah,
you would have to change the whole season out.
Then do it. Because I remember Ange did a watch party because she thought she was in an episode of The Shield, and they cut that crap out. And
oh my god,
everybody was like,
"I know, I've had that experience." I remember I did. I was in American Gangster when they the movie.
Oh, nice,
bro. I don't even think I saw myself.
But you were able to credit it? Like, they kept you in?
I don't even remember now. I know I got a waiver for it, but yeah, I was like, I was in the army when they were like bringing the caskets.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even, I actually have to go watch it again to see if I was, back then I remember I went to the movies and I'm like, yo, me and my friends, we watching it. And it was like the longest period of time. I was like, I don't think that part coming up. I was like, oh, maybe we missed it. Yeah, it was real quick, y'all. Yeah, I probably missed it. Yeah, we probably waiting for it to come out on DVD, y'all. Yeah.
Bro, well, big ups to amazing things coming in acting, man. I'm praying for nothing but success. Appreciate you for taking time out.
Bro, thanks for having me, man. Of course. I'm excited to be on here, man.
Yeah, bro. Well, we appreciate you guys. And like we always say, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you're always welcome at ours. Cheers.